Jason Babin. Jason, good morning. How are you?
Excuse me, I'm a little out of breath here. We just finished a little training over here in South Jersey.
Oh, that's nice. That's a good thing. I mean, that is a good thing.
Clean living.
Hey, you know what? You're running away from. I got to find about the bear thing. Forget about the fact that whatever you were up there hunting bears. Has a bear? When you hunt the bears, you know, I watched that movie. Who was it with Alec Baldwin, or was it Anthony Hopkins? I guess they were both in that movie, where the bear came after him. Did you ever have a close call with a bear when you were bear hunting?
Well, firstly, let me back up a little bit.
Okay.
Situation. A lot of times when you are hunting for brown bear, mm-hmm. Yeah, you might say you're hunting, but in actuality, the bears are hunting you. Because, you know, they pick up your scent, you're on their territory. It's a mom, and she's defending, you know, her cubs. Well, yeah, you might be the one doing the shooting, but, you know, she's the one with the intent to maul you. But we didn't have any too close of calls, because the few sows we've cupped right into, we were able to stay about 200 yards away. We had some room, but talking with my guides, they've had some close calls where, you know, they had to shoot the bear because they were, you know, 10, 15 yards away.
All right, well, so now the bears are hunting you. That's the, in that movie was kind of true, where the bears kind of hunt you down. And you have never, and this obviously wasn't the first time recently that you've been bear hunting, you never had a close call where the bear was closer than you really wanted it to be?
So we put a good stalk on this bear. It was down eating a dead moose in this little kind of flooded area. We kind of had the advantage. We were kind of coming, you know, a little uphill, and he's behind this big berm. And I'm filming Steve, so I'm kind of flanking Steve so I can film the bear. Steve shooting the bear with his bow and arrow. So you have to get close. And the guy said, put his dog on. He said, listen, we'll get up to the bear. It'll get a little upset. Stand up. Shoot it right in the right center chest. If it turns and runs at us, hit the ground, you know, I'll back you with my rifle. So I want to do this all on tape. I got Steve mic'd up. And I can hear him. He's breathing heavy. You know, he's... you know, because you can hear this bear at this point, just crunching on the bones, the flesh, you know, everything. And I'm trying to film them. I got the, you know, camera looked at them. I'm looking at the screen on the camera. All of a sudden, I see them. They're looking at me. So they're looking at me. I realize, well, why are they looking at me? So I kind of pan in front of me, and the bear must have winded them and came and circled around towards me. So I'm standing looking at them. The bear's standing looking at me, and I kind of slowly turn. And for whatever reason, the bear decided just to run the opposite direction. But it was right there looking right at me.
Now, you had obviously a rifle or a gun to be able to shoot it if the bear came after you, right?
Oh, I didn't have anything. I was filming. I was crawling. I was trying to stay out of harm's way.
Well, and they're fast,
you know,
too.
I'm confident Steve and the guide would have, they would have took care of me.
And I'm sure they would have. Those bears are kind of, they're fast, too, aren't they?
Yeah, they're real fast. I mean, they're running on two big muscular legs. They got big lungs, and they're, you know, the ferocious animals.
All right. Now, on a football field, you're not scared. And if you're scared, I guess you got to get a dog. But were you ever scared when you went out with bear hunting and in this situation where the bear was pretty close?
No, I mean, I don't. It was pretty good. In Alaska, where I was at, it's wide open tundra. So there's nothing really for these bears to hide behind. You know, if you're looking a couple miles with the binoculars and across the field and you see a big cow coming at you, well, you know it's a bear. So it's not like grizzly bear hunting where there's woods and trees and, you know, kind of a lot of cover for them.
Wow. Boy, that's amazing. All right, let's get to football, because it's a little easier to play football from what I just heard when you're out there with the bears. It's a different season. Last year was all that nonsense with the Dream Team, and that wasn't your fault. That was Vince Young, who came in, you know, had a cup of coffee, as it's a baseball term here with the Eagles. But that kind of put you guys, or the question should be, how much pressure did that put on the Eagles last year when everybody was talking about the Dream Team?
I don't think the actual phrase Dream Team put any pressure on us. You know, we put a lot of pressure on ourselves internally. You know, we expect greatness when we practice, when we work out. when we play the game, when we scrimmage. That's the kind of standard we hold ourselves to, you know, and looking back at the tape, I think everyone would agree that we did it to ourselves, maybe outside of the Seattle game. You know, the mistakes we made, the missed tackles, the fumbles, drop passes, all the different things that, you know, caused us to lose, those were our fault, you know, our mistakes. So we're trying to focus on taking care of the Eagles, and we know the rest will take care of itself.
All right, now the defense, everybody blame Juan Castillo, and people criticize me because I wanted to give him a chance before, and you really should give him a chance. These people in Philadelphia, whether it's the media, whether it's the fans, well, what does he know about defense? Well, that's what he played when he was a football player. But and Dick Vermeil, I don't know if you knew this, Dick Vermeil told me that Bill Walsh was a defensive coach before he became the great offensive coach that he was. So I'm ready to give him a chance. But how did it change for Juan and for you guys last year that now you take into this season?
Well, we've all been in a situation where I think everyone's taken a chance on us, you know, and they put a lot on line for it. So I think you're correct in saying that, you know, I'm not one to evaluate anyone's coaching talent, whether they did good or bad, but you have to give, I think, a coach in a position like that more than a year, especially with all the things that happened in the lockout, the coaching changes, the philosophy changes, the players, everything. Yeah, so I think that's a little unfair to put the burden on Coach Wally.
All right, now this season, what do you, and this is only your first mini camp, do you see things now that you're doing differently, or just an extension of last year, and how is that going to make you better?
We're really doing nothing different. But the difference is, with the new scheme, the new coaching staff, new players, we know what we're doing. It looks better, it feels better, and everyone understands how the system works. You know, it's like something like a clock. You know, for the clock to run perfectly, all parts have to be exactly right and functioning right. You know, and that's, I think, the direction we're heading towards. You know, you watch how smooth practice is, how smooth the play calling is. Everyone knows what's going on. They know what to expect. They expect this call. They expect that call. You know, so, I mean, new guys are, you know, learning from, obviously, the guys that, you know, a little more seasoned. So you know, it's just fun to be out there in this kind of environment right now.
You took the defense took a hit last year, but when you really break it down, 38 turnovers don't win you a lot of football games. And you're a team, but is there a point when you kind of say, hey, listen, they got to hold up their end of the bargain, the offense?
No, I think that causes problems. You can't ever have that attitude. Whether, you know, it's offense, defense, or special teams that kind of put the team, which is the most important part, in a situation, we have to have each other's back. You know, there's times when, you know, the offense scores a whole bunch of points and we give up a whole bunch of points and still win. Or there's times where they only put up 2 points and guess what? We hold them to fewer points. You know, that's part of the team concept. So we buy the philosophy that we never point fingers.
All right, how much does DeMarco Ryans mean to this defense this year?
I believe it's D'Amico Ryan.
Oh, D'Amico. You know what? I appreciate you. First of all, I appreciate you correcting me because, you know, I got to get used to his name, too. But, no, I'm good with that. Okay, D'Amico is right. I don't know why his mom named him D'Amico. I would have named him DeMarco. But how much does D'Amico Ryans mean to this defense?
Well, I don't know if you've had time to personally interview him or anything, but if you meet him in person, you know, he's that quiet, all business, and he's a big guy. I mean, you look at him, you stand next to him, and he's a big guy. And he takes charge of our defense. So, I mean, he's kind of something that I think everyone was asking for, aspiring to. And, you know, I think one of the keys that we needed, you know, for our defense.
Yeah, actually, I was impressed when I met him the first time, and just the way he handled himself in that whole situation. And then mini camps, I don't know what we can tell on the sidelines. You guys know better on the field. But obviously, you know that what he's doing is, when you have a middle linebacker that does that, it just makes the defense better, I'm sure.
I think once we get some pads on, everyone's going to be a little bit more excited about D'Amico Ryan's stuff in that middle.
All right, no pads on yesterday, yet you had a skirmish with Jeremy Maclin. What the hell happened?
You know what? I said yesterday, I said, listen, I said, if if we had a bunch of guys out here that were soft, you know, soft's not my first word that comes to mind, if you get my drift,
mm-hmm.
we wouldn't have any fights. We wouldn't have any scrimmages, you know, but, you know, this team is aggressive. You know, they're confident. You know, everyone wants to be, you know, on top. So when you have a bunch of high motor athletes that are always competing, you know, things happen. And the good part about us is we live on the field.
All right, one other thing, and I know you've addressed it 100 times because with ESPN they blow it up beyond blowing it up. The run with the Bulls, that was just a passing thought. Would I be correct in that assumption? And that's not really going to happen.
Listen, I have a wedding to attend overseas, and I will be in the vicinity of it. And in my mind, you know, I'm a adventurous guy. You know, I do swim with sharks, skydiving. You know, see my alligator wrestling thing on ESPN. I mean, that's how I've always lived my life. This isn't something new. This has been some new fad. I mean, I've been doing this since I've been a young kid. And now it just seems since the Eagles are paying me so much money that everyone is up in arms about it, which, you know, I guess I understand. Well, I'll say this, that there is probably going to be some discussions Monday morning at the NovaCare.
And the head coach will say, do you want to lose those millions of dollars? You know, non-football injuries, we can take the money back. Doesn't that kind of ring a bell for you too?
I'll say this. I've been very fortunate, you know, being drafted early. I don't do this anymore for cash. I do this for my love and playing the game, playing the style I want to play. I think it's obvious when I play the way I play, whether the commissioner tells me to or not, because I play it because I love it and I like playing a certain way. So I wouldn't say that's my decision making. My decision making is coach is my boss. I'm the kind of guy that does what my boss says. So that's all I can say.
You know what? I actually respect that. How many, and you sound like you really do love the game. A lot of guys say, oh, I play for the love of the game. But in professional sports, there are, and I'll just say a lot of players, I don't know how many, that play it for the cash. But I really do, I just believe what you said. I don't believe players all the time. I believe what you just said, that you play it for the love of the game. Just something about the way you play and the way you handle yourself around that football team. Believe it or not, I believe you, Jason. I do.
I don't lie either, so I'm glad we're on the same page.
All right, one other question, because I want to understand your farm in Texas. Now, people pay to come there and hunt. Is that the way it works?
It used to be that way. Now it's really just a Bab in Wonderland. And we have cows. You know, we're strictly organic. We have commercial-grade venison. We have, you know, all kinds of other wildlife that's naturally there. We have a big, like, 20-acre lake. You know, it's something to, you know, we can get there with the Babin family and the extended Babin family. It's just a place for us to kind of detach and detox from the rest of the world.
And the public can come there, correct?
No.
No, okay.
It was closed to the public about 4 years ago. But,
oh, really?
You know, friends and family get the invite. You know what I mean? So, keep buttering me up. We'll see what happens.
All right. Well, you know, I'll work on it this year so I can get an invite if I ever go to Texas.
All right.
All right. Hey, Jason, thanks. I'll see you next week. And, actually, you know what? We enjoy the fights. The media enjoys. There's nothing else really to get excited about. So if you want to go off on somebody else, feel free.
Listen, I don't ever start fights. I just go hard and play hard and try to keep everybody's tempo upbeat.
Hey, man, thanks for coming on this morning. Thanks very much.
All right. Thank you.
All right, take care. Jason Babin.